Rewind, your week in review is sponsored by the Wisconsin Realtors Association, bringing Wisconsin communities to life with great homes, businesses, and neighborhoods. The Wisconsin Realtors Association, the voice of real estate.
This program is brought to you from Wisconsin Eye's Margaret Farrow Studio.
This week on Rewind, your week in review, the GOP leaders of the Assembly and Senate are at odds over a key aspect of the local government funding bill. Coming up, how this could throw a wrench into negotiations going forward. Plus, the new pay raises proposed in the criminal justice system and how much money lawmakers earmarked to fight PFAS contaminations. And the solutions Republicans introduced to address a shortage of housing across the state. All this and more on Rewind, your week in review for May 19th.
Hi, I'm Emily Fannin.
And I'm J.R. Ross.
J.R., we're going to start with the shared revenue front, because there seems to be a little rift between the GOP leaders right now over a key component in that massive bill that would send more money to local governments the first time in decades. They've been asking for this, but the key provision is over how Milwaukee would be able to raise its sales tax, the city and the county. So after the Assembly voted on Wednesday with their amended bill, the next day, Senate Majority Leader Devin Lemahue says, well, that's not really the version I like. So that's really where this is at right now. So what Lemahue said is that he's not going to support the provision that Assembly Republicans passed that would allow the city and the county to raise their sales tax through referendum. Instead, Lemahue said he prefers allowing having the Milwaukee Common Council and the county board to be able to vote to pass a sales tax increase. So that's really the main sticking point right now. Let's first just hear from Assembly Speaker Robin Voss and Lemahue on this issue. And also what really kind of got them a little, you know, exchanging jabs at each other is because Voss said that he's done negotiating, that he doesn't want to meet anymore after months and months of doing this. So let's take a listen.
These negotiations have happened over the course of several weeks, frankly, several months. There's been arguments, there's been compromises. You can negotiate yourself to death, right? You can never stop negotiations. But we feel like 6 months worth of time was enough negotiations. Now it's time to act. We are done negotiating. We are not going to take changes. We are not going to change the bill substantially. What we have before us is the deal that we are going to send to our colleagues in the state Senate, and hopefully Governor Evers agrees that this historic investment is worth signing.
It's unfortunate that he's drawing the line in the sand now with his version of the bill and stopping negotiations on a bill that not everybody's in agreement on. We're going to do our due diligence, make sure we have a bill that at least all the stakeholders can get behind. And if the Assembly at some point refuses to take up that bill, a bill that is going to make generational changes to townships, counties, municipalities all around the state, he's going to have to answer to his caucus at that point.
I think the main argument here, and I should say maybe challenge, is no one wants to raise taxes. Yeah. The county board, even the Milwaukee Common Council, what I'm hearing too, there's not a lot of people who even have a majority vote to do that. Or even if you put it before voters, it's convincing voters that, yeah, you should raise your taxes. So that's the challenge going forward, because it seems right now both avenues could possibly fail.
So Robin Voss has made the point that Governor Evers in his original proposal for shared revenue had a referendum for Milwaukee as well. The difference is it was a 1% sales tax increase for Milwaukee, for the entire county and city, split in that revenue, and there are no strings attached. This referendum would be for 0.375% for the county, 2% for the city, and it would basically all go toward paying off pension obligations. That's a hard sell to voters to say, raise your own taxes to pay for this problem that you didn't create. The Common Council and the County Board over years of mismanagement created this problem. How do you convince them to do that? So for Republicans, also, referendum is like a core principle. If you're going to raise taxes, locals should have, you know, say in it. So let's say we go to the enabling legislation that says the Common Council and the County Board could do it. What's the mark going to be? Unanimous, which is what some Republicans are pushing for, or majority vote? There's a sentiment among Republicans of, okay, look, one, you're not going to get a unanimous vote by the county board or the city common council. So why not have the referendum? If there's a question about either passing that way, why not do that? Obviously, going to a majority vote makes it easier. But then for Republicans, like, look, we're giving Milwaukee the tools to fix their sins. These problems are created by, I mean, leaders of the past, not the mayor's fault, not the county executive's fault, it's been years ago. We're giving you tools to fix these things. If you come back with a split vote, like by one or two votes, it's like kicking us in the shins for helping you out. So there might be a path here where Republicans take out the referendum component but require unanimous vote, because that might be like saying to Milwaukee, look, you've got to do so. You have to show unanimity here. You have to show some appreciation for what we're doing. Now, the tough thing for most local leaders is, okay, there are all these strings attached to the money. And, you know, the things like the 5% cap on spending your budgets on cultural things, or, you know, things like that, okay, that might not be that big of a deal. The diversity, equity, and inclusion, though, that's a tough pill to swallow, talking to Milwaukee Democrats, saying, look, you're talking about white lawmakers in Madison telling a city with a huge black population, you have to do it this way. And that's kind of a tough one. So I don't know if that there's any wiggle room on that, too, because Robin Voss is locked in on DEI when it comes to university, right? Mm-hmm. That is a big thing for Republicans. So there are lots of challenges. There's a path forward, lots of challenges, but there's a path forward to get this thing done.
Right, and also speaking about the unanimous vote, too, that was something that Voss said Republicans wanted. However, when I asked David Crowley's office, you know, where, you know, is that true? Is that something that was negotiated? They didn't, you know, actually say, you know, confirm that, but he spoke to the nature of that. It's been so rare in recent history that the county board has ever gone to a unanimous vote. It's not something typically that we see. So they're also a little cautious on that side that, you know, maybe we don't want that path. Also, there's always a huge component of educating voters about these issues, because when I talk to Senator LaTanya Johnson, a Milwaukee Democrat, she fears that people don't really understand, residents, I should say, about what are the consequences if you don't raise your taxes. It doesn't matter, she says, about the paths to get there. It's reminding people of what could happen, about how close they are on the brink of bankruptcy come 2025 when they're going to reach this fiscal cliff. Now, let's also just talk about what Republicans, Assembly Republicans, changed in this bill, because I wouldn't say there was drastic changes, but it was amended. Here are some of those. So some of the additional changes would allow local governments to hold advisory referendums on only capital projects funded by taxpayers. So that could be school improvements, mm-hmm. if you want to build a new bridge in the area. The original bill said absolutely no advisory referendums. It would also prohibit local health officials from requiring businesses to not close in response to an outbreak or epidemic no longer than 30 days. It would also require Milwaukee Public Schools to hire more police officers. And the addition that was added to this amendment is that those officers would get a 40-hour training course. The other big picture of what changed in this bill is, instead of every municipality getting 10% increase in state aid, they would see at least a minimum of 15%. But Milwaukee would still be the only one that would remain at 10, because Voss explained they would still have the ability to raise their sales tax.
Yeah, and for Republicans, talking to them, they feel like, look, they negotiated a deal with the county executive and the mayor already, right, this original package. So they feel like they've already compromised in what they're doing here with this amendment. Don't forget, however, there's a third leg to the stool. That's Governor Tony Evers. Mm-hmm. He's called for a clean bill, wants no referendum component. He's not going to get a clean bill. That is not going to. They're not going to take out all the restrictions, all the strings, maybe some for locals, but not all of them. So what do you have to do to get Evers to a yes as well? And then there's this kind of like a little bit of a drama here about how it's going to resolve itself. It's like a play. There are always three acts to the play. Robin Voss said if the Senate amends the bill to take out the referendum component, there's something called non-concur, which basically means we don't agree with your change. Okay, that has not killed the bill. There are many options ahead if that were to come about. One option would be to go to a conference committee. It hasn't happened, last I remember, like 2 decades ago. But you basically appoint members from each house to a committee. They hash out an agreement, passes as is with the houses. You could both be on the floor the same day and pass it back and forth and make changes and negotiate. But Evers has a say. Now the question is, if it fails, who gets the blame, right? They're all going to try and blame each other if it fails. Don't get me wrong. But who would get the blame? And don't forget, too, there's another component, the budget. If this were to fail as a bill, there is still a chance to put it in the budget last minute. I've been through many joint finance processes where all of a sudden, 11 o'clock, the last day of finance, there's this massive amendment that comes in. Not saying it's going to happen, but there are other options. to get at this. The challenge for Evers a bit is he wants to know, okay, what are you going to do in the shared revenue bill, but also what are you going to transit aids for local governments? Because if you're going to give them an increase here for county municipal aid, but then cut transit aids, I'm not happy, right? So these two things working together, but Republicans want to keep them separate because they want the policy separate from the spending. You're going to see that a lot with this budget. The policy goes in a separate bill. The money goes in the budget. That way it protects the policy from being partially vetoed by Evers because there's no fiscal component. So.
And we learned from LeVihue that he wants to hold public hearings next week on the original bill. For now, he's going to ignore Assembly Republicans' amendment, but he also clarified that means he won't consider some of those changes mm-hmm. that we discussed. So by no means is this the end road. Even Milwaukee officials that we spoke to throughout the week after Wednesday and after LeVihue's comment, they're all saying, hey, this is the legislative process. I mean, me and you know how this works out. This is just the beginning. We could also have many scenarios that you laid out, and it could also be a tennis match. I mean, they could both be in session on the same day and just pass different versions of the bill back and forth and have another very late night for us both.
Yeah.
All right, let's move on to another big story this week as we saw Joint Finance Committee start taking significant action on allocating millions of dollars in the next state budget. What they first took up on Tuesday was doing pay raises. I'm jumping ahead of myself. We have a slide on the fiscal outlook. I apologize. Before we get to joint finance, let's just talk about their finances right now, because there was a slight shift in what the projections show. So the state's fiscal picture through mid-2025 took a slight hit after the Legislative Fiscal Bureau projected Wisconsin will take in $755 million less than what the agency had projected 4 months ago. Now, still, LFB noted that the drop in revenues would offset somewhat near in the next term, leaving the state with roughly about $6.9 billion surplus. So that is still a lot of money, which was originally projected at $7.1 billion. So, but this is also kind of rare that we've seen kind of this type of dip during this time period, too,
so
JR.
The process is the Fiscal Bureau every January does revenue estimates that build off of what every January of an odd year, build off what the administration projected in November. So you get this November look from the administration, January from LFB, and then in May, LFB goes, okay, we're going to do one last look and give you guys the best numbers we can before you finish off the budget. Going back the last dozen years, this is the first time LFB has said there's not more money, there is less. Now, there are twice that they said we're going to stand pat. But remember, 2 years ago, they projected unprecedented revenue growth in the next 2 years. Like they went from where they were in January to $4 billion in May. Well, June it was actually, because of COVID money, right? Everything was pumped into the system. So this time around, there's a dip. It's 1.2% of tax collections, not a huge amount of money. But what to watch going forward are, one, there is still revenue growth in the next two-year period. If you look at what we expect to take in from 21-23 versus 23-25, it should grow about $1.6 billion. That's your real pot of money to increase spending without going into a, they call it structural deficit going forward, which means you can raise spending on education, Evers' bottom line. You can cut taxes, the Republican bottom line. Within that cushion, without creating long-term commitments that may put us in a hole that we have to grow by X million dollars in 2025 just to break even. You have the surplus, still $6.9 billion, still a lot of money, a jaw-dropping amount of money, but it's mostly one-time money, and that's the rub there. We could spend $7 billion plus in this biennium, more than what we spent the past one, but we'd create that hole going forward. So Republicans are going to look, we weren't counting on spending all $7 billion anyway, so this is not a huge deal. Yeah, it's a little bit less money. We're going to just be a little more cautious with how we spend things, but it's still going to be okay. What I'm watching is, where's the real expenditure with that pot of like one-time money? Is it one-time expenditures, right? You know, road projects, building projects, stuff you can pay off in one shot. Do they do like a tax rebate kind of thing? Like, what's their plan for that money, because it's not going to be around forever? Or do they hold on to some of it? That could be, you know, something, an option for them.
All right, so let's just rewind a little bit, because I teed up joint finance before I even got to this slide. So, all right, it's been a long week. So speaking of joint finance, two things they took on. First thing on Tuesday was pay raises, raising the minimum hourly wage for public defenders and assistant district attorneys, as the industry has really struggled to retain staff and manage caseloads. Then on Thursday, the joint finance had a little bit of a longer meeting that lasted until about 9 p.m. last night. They took action to address water contamination, earmarking $125 million to combat PFAS. However, the GOP-controlled committee left out details on how to spend that money for a trailer bill that was introduced by Senator Whitberger earlier in the week. So this is, in a sense, yes, good news, but Democrats were critical and voted against it because they want to know the details of how you're going to spend this money. Let's take a listen from both sides on this issue.
So today I'm proud to announce that the legislature is going to be investing $125 million into a PFAS fund to address this important issue. PFAS is a important issue. We've heard a lot as we've traveled the state. We've created a separate account to address PFAS now and into the future. $110 million of that will be general purpose revenue and $15 million from the environmental management SEG account. So it's a big problem, obviously, in our state, and the legislature is taking this problem very seriously by committing $125 million to it.
If you want the people in Wisconsin to have safe and clean drinking water, how do you eliminate the testing for their wells? Everyone in this state is entitled to go to their tap, turn it on, and trust that the water that comes out of their kitchen sink is safe for themselves and their children to drink. They deserve better. They deserve better than what we are giving them right now.
So you heard Senator LaTanya Johnson talk about how, you know, what are we doing here? We're passing all this money, putting it into basically a pot, and don't really have any details. But we do know Senator Whitberger does plan to bring that bill forth, and that has a lot more things in it, including testing and expanding how people can, you know, track what is in their water system.
So we're going to see this again a lot with this budget, where there is money in the budget but a trailer bill. They tried it actually in this budget. So the personal property tax is a tax on business property, okay? They, in this current budget, put a provision in to fully repeal that tax. They put the money in the budget, but they had a separate bill to repeal the personal property tax. Evers killed that, said, nope, we're not doing the personal property tax that way. I've got problems with this, this, and this. So that didn't work. So the money just sat there in the Joint Finance Committee's appropriation, unused. The fear Democrats have is, okay, you're talking about this bill about PFAS. What if it doesn't pass? If it doesn't pass, then that money just sits there. Now, you could argue there'll be pressure on Evers to sign this PFAS bill because it's something. It's $125 million. He proposed $107 million. So they, hey, we put more money than you did. But there's also restrictions on that Whitberger bill, which are written by with Rob Coles, too, from Green Bay. Things like restrictions on how the DNR approaches this issue, those kinds of things. So that's going to be something to watch. Separately with the DAs and prosecutors, the public defenders, one thing to note is there's been a coalition of the Department of Justice, the court system, DAs, public defenders who have lobbied for three straight budgets now for increases for everybody. Like, they basically said, look, we all want more money. These are core priorities, though, because to make the court system work, you have to have these things functioning. They got a little bit of bumps the last two budgets, but not a big one. This is a big bump. We're talking $18,000 a year per prosecutor, per public defender in raising salary. And one thing that drove this home, people tell me, is go back to January, the Dodge County DA resigned saying, look, I can't do this anymore. We don't have enough people. He left the office without anybody on staff. Well, a week later, the other was retired. There's nobody else on staff. Retired prosecutors come in and take the caseload for Dodge County. That's the crisis coming home for Lyman. Okay, now I see what's going on. Yeah, you guys have complained before, but now in fiscal year 2021, the vacancy rate, the turnover rate for DAs, assistant DAs, and public defenders, top 20% each. Now, that's for non-retirements. That's leaving for, like, you know, got a better job, found something else to do. that drove home, we've got a problem here, we've got to fix it. And they finally are taking away a step to really hopefully address this.
All right. And also, let's move on to some public hearings that happened this week at the Capitol, specifically about making housing more affordable is this package of bills that Republicans have been touting. So the Assembly and Senate Committee on Housing and Real Estate both held hearings on a package of bills that would create more affordable housing for workers, reduce regulations, and reform outdated practices. One of the bills would make construction costs more affordable, as the industry has been dealing with a shortage of supplies impending their ability to build new homes. Another proposal targets developers, which would give them more flexibility to construct homes in neighborhoods that residents may oppose, which is also, they're coining this as a bill called Not in My Backyard, which means, you know, residents saying they're mm-hmm. typically opposed to a change of dynamics in their neighborhood, or they're concerned that it would increase a rise in crime. I mean, there's a variety of reasons here. So some of these bills are a little bit similar to what we saw last session, but they're pushing forth these again because they keep talking about this mounting crisis that we're facing. I mean, I feel like I've lived it as well. There still is not a lot of availability of houses out there, but these bills kind of really just target a lot about, you know, rehabbing old homes and giving certain tax credits and loans developers and builders. It also deals with building more affordable housing for low to middle income earners, especially seniors too. So it's kind of just hits a lot of different industries and markets in hopes to address this problem, but we still don't really know where the governor stands on this bill. Most of the bills do have backing from, you know, the counties and the League of Municipalities as well. So we'll just see where this advances, because of course there's a lot of other issues going on, but I could see this going forward as what we call those themed session days of these bills moving forward as well.
Yeah, the only question with these bills was the local control issue.
Correct.
That's when you get pushback about, okay, you want to set statewide standards, but now you're trampling on local control that dictates to us, because we have a unique, I'm pretending to be a mayor right now.
Yeah.
We have a unique circumstance in our city. You don't know how it works here. Why are you telling me how I got to do things?
And that is some of the pushback, where the league is kind of, I guess, neutral on some of the bills because of the ability of restricting local control. All right, let's get to stock picks. This week is rising, going back to a law that was approved by voters a while ago, Marcy's Law. But SCOTUS upheld kind of this really interesting dynamic, kind of bigger picture here about this.
So a vote was 6-1 that the amendment was presented to voters properly. So with amendments, you can't like have multiple different questions under one. The court ruled that it was properly presented as one question with one real big issue, which is expanding the rights of crime victims. That was the big story this week for most people covering the case. You know, I like my rabbit holes and go down them quite often, so go with me on this one here. But if you really read that decision closely, there's really a remarkable kind of line being drawn by the liberal bloc and the conservative bloc about how the court should operate going forward. And it's noteworthy because we're about to have the majority flip for some 15 years to a 4-3 liberal majority. In that decision, Brian Hagedorn, a conservative who swings back, you know, each side sometimes, wrote the Supreme Court of Wisconsin should follow an originalist approach to decisions, period. Basically, how the Constitution was written, when it was written, dictates how we act. All right? And he had all three other conservatives on board with him. Rebecca Dallet, a liberal justice, said, not so much. We need to take a more expansive approach, looking at other things we take into account what's going on. It's kind of like that argument you see nationally about, is the Constitution a living, breathing document for the United States, or is it a set in stone, you look at it how it was framed in the 1700s, right? Dallet's saying, there's a new sheriff in town. We're going to do things this way. You guys are trying to lock in how we're going to act. You can't tell us what to do come August when Janet Protasiewicz joins the court. So why is that important? Redistricting that comes before the court. The liberal, or conservative bloc, I'm sorry, during that lawsuit said there's no right in the Constitution to fairness when it comes to maps. That may be an argument you hear from the liberal bloc in a decision that we anticipate, can't guarantee, that anticipate about redistricting. The abortion lawsuit, that was written in 1849, around the time that we became a state. How will the liberals look at that with their version of how things are versus the conservative? These are going to be really important standards for the court going forward about how it operates for at least the next 2 years.
It really sets the tone going forward. Mm-hmm. All right, mixed this week is Robin Voss, going back to the shared revenue, because the big question here is, when you call negotiations off, does he really mean things are done, take it or leave it approach?
There is some frustration among some Republicans that the Senate Republican caucus does not act with haste. They are not known for being very fast over there. Some Republicans want this thing to be done already. They wanted to be through this, to have it knocked out, to figure out the budget, how it was going to work with it. So now we got the situation where what's Robin trying to do? Is he trying to kind of push the Senate into action? And what's going to happen when they push back? So we talked before about there's options, you know, conference committee, pushing it back and forth. There's a way through. Let's look at the Senate real quick, right, the dynamic over there. Republicans only like to pass things with 17 votes in the Senate that are Republican votes. They don't want Democratic votes. Okay, how do you get to 17 in the Senate without the referendum component? If you look real closely at that assembly bill that passed, there's a proposal in there for tax incremental financing districts, which are an economic development tool for local governments. Dewey Strobel has been pushing for this for years. It's not a coincidence the assembly added that provision. That gets Dewey on board. Okay, there's one possible holdout. Now do your math. Steve Noss of Whitewater doesn't vote for things, period, when it comes to a compromise, anything like that. So he's off. Then you have to look at Chris Capia, Waukesha County Senate President, Delafield. He doesn't believe in giving more money, basically, period, so he's probably a no. Then you have three Milwaukee County area, like, you know, touch a little bit.
Right.
Rob Hutton, Julian Bradley, Dan Knodel. Let's say that all five of those are no's. There are 22 Republicans right now. That's still 17. The path is still there to pass the bill without the referendum component. Then we get into the back and forth about will they accept that in the assembly? Will they go for a majority vote with the county board, common council, or a unanimous vote? Okay. The other big question is, what's the path to getting it done, period? Go back and look at what the assembly did on this week. They added about 30-some million dollars to the pot of money of county municipal aid. If you look real closely at how much would come off of the sales tax for this pot of money for local governments, there's still about $67 million bucks just sitting around. Lawmakers don't usually have money just laying around for no good reason. You could sweeten the pot to Evers by saying, okay, you're going to go ahead and accept these several restrictions on local governments. We're going to give you more money. We'll move the referendum piece. Then you sign it. But now, Governor, what do I get? This is where it gets interesting. What's the Republican ask? Because for Republicans, you know, raising taxes, again, core value. We don't raise taxes, period, but especially we give people a say in raising taxes. If you're not going to give them a say, that's violating core principle. So, Evers, what's your core principle you're going to give on? Is it the top income tax rate, 7.65%? Republicans want to lower that. Evers has said no. Is it school choice? They want to expand it. Evers has said no. You can see the path to get there. The question is, do they grab hands
right
and walk down it? And two, did Robbins gamble here to say that I'm done negotiating? Does it spur the Senate to act and get this done? Now, the timing gets tricky because they want a budget done by the end of June out of both houses, all that kind of good stuff. So we're getting to the point where the pressure is on. Can they get it done quickly, or is this going to push this budget back a bit?
All right. Stay tuned. All right. And following this week is unemployment rate, as we got another new record here.
Yeah, real quick, down to 2.4%, new record. We were at like above 9 in the Great Recession in 09, 010, that period. We spiked to 14. But we've been going down from 09, 010 to that spike in 2020, back down again. The question is, how low can you go? And then two, don't forget, the Federal Reserve does not like low employment like this because it dries up competition for workers, which dries up wages, which contributes to inflation. So there is this kind of great news for workers, not so great news for employers who are now paying more, which then also drives up prices.
Right, and there's still a worker shortage all across
yes.
the state and across the nation. All right, that will do it for this week. Thanks so much for joining us. I'm Emily Fannin.
And I'm J.R. Ross.
We'll see you next week.
This program is brought to you from Wisconsin Eye's Margaret Farrow Studio.
Rewind. Your Week in Review is sponsored by the Wisconsin Realtors Association, bringing Wisconsin communities to life with great homes, businesses, and neighborhoods. The Wisconsin Realtors Association, the voice of real estate.